Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is the January 27th. Right?
Yes. Yeah, you good today.
Yeah. I knew that because the Grammys was the 26th, and I knew the date.
The month is almost over.
Yes, bonkers. And this has been a horrible month.
January is always wild long.
Yeah, and people always go with the Hyper Bowl, but this has definitely been, I don't know if it's like the worst January ever, because who knows, nobody's lived that long, but this has been a bad January, starting with the war shit, with Trump and all the craziness that he's done, with the Cuanero virus, which I'm going to bring up a little later, with the Philippines volcano, with the earthquake in Puerto Rico. I feel like there was another earthquake somewhere else.
The fires in Australia.
It's like every few days it's another like horrific story. And then the story that we're going to talk about to start the show today is, sadly, Kobe Bryant passing away, age 41, was killed in a helicopter crash yesterday morning on his way to practice with his 13-year-old daughter, who was also killed. Nine people were killed in total. I don't think we have the names of everybody.
No, I think we do, except the pilot. It was Kobe and his daughter. It was one of the Mamba team's basketball coaches and her daughter.
Yes.
I have to look up her name. And then there was a baseball coach, his wife, and his daughter.
Yeah.
Okay. And then that would leave, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and that leaves two people, which I'm guessing are a pilot and one other person.
Yeah. So, I mean, horrific crash. Somebody sent me a clip of the actual crash.
I heard the clip that's circulating is not.
It's not real? It's not it?
Well, it's not that crash. I don't know. I haven't seen it. I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
But by all reports, because even before TMZ was the first person to name Kobe, most news outlets weren't at first because they were just saying
helicopter crash.
Right, but the reports of just the crash itself said that it was all the people who saw it or were near it said that nobody could have walked away from that crash. And it started like a whole fire, which is why they didn't get to it.
Because the ground is so dry.
It was up in the hills. Yeah, like our location. But the thing about the copter crash that's the most scary, less so here in New York, but really in LA, people hop in helicopters to avoid that traffic all the time.
All the time.
Especially if you live out there,
Calabasas, Malibu, Manhattan Beach, that kind of on the water, on the coast of LA, like you said, to drive. To downtown LA from there on the wrong day is smooth 2 hours.
Yeah, and so if you have the means and the access, like you can literally Uber a helicopter. So it's like that. It wasn't any like, oh, we're on a sightseeing tour. Or, oh, we were on some kind of special. But it's a normal like, yo, let's talk. What happened in the chopper?
Yeah,
to go over.
He's been doing that since he was like 19, 20 years old.
Yeah,
people do that for the Hamptons in New York.
The Hamptons,
Connecticut all the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm. So it really was just like, yo, we just going to basketball practice, we'll be back. And it really does just lend itself to the fact, like, you just really, you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I think was the biggest shock here, right? Was that, Kobe did not, he basically kind of lived this sort of idealistic life, right? Like, he was the picture of health. He had financial stability.
Yeah,
he had all of the things that you would expect to take you into old age.
Yeah, beautiful family.
He's right? Like all of the things. Yeah, so when seemed about, to
be a great dad, you know, locked in with his wife, everything.
So I think that has been sort of the shock in it.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought that, you know, I wondered, I was like, well, is this what kind of people felt when, like, maybe Roberto Clemente had passed away in the plane crash, like back in the day? You know, obviously he wasn't as big as Kobe. Right. You didn't have TMZ, so it wasn't as cultural of an impact. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. for the communities that it impacted, I mean, just that shock and that initial, like, wow.
Yeah,
I imagine this is what it felt like when our parents heard Otis, you know.
Yeah,
right.
Like he's 30. Like, wait, he's just getting going, you know.
And I think also what Sean said, what's hard about Kobe is that, you know, this man dedicated his entire life to this game, like, in full. And he was really settling into retired dad mode comfortably, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he's got the Mamba team going. He's setting his daughter up to carry on his legacy.
He won an Oscar.
Mm-hmm. You know, who knows what other kind of creative work he had ahead.
I'm sure.
Somebody said, I don't know if it's true, but somebody said that he was looking to establish a WNBA team so that Mamba could be a funnel.
Yeah, yeah. He got heavy into women's athletics.
Right.
And he's also heavy into soccer.
Yeah, I mean, it just and you know, he and Vanessa just had another baby
in June.
Yeah, that's what really broke my heart. It's like there's a baby who's not gonna know him at all.
Yeah,
the 3-year-old is barely.
But to say, the 3-year-old is gonna just have fleeting memories. You know?
Listen, a tragic death is a tragic death, but a tragic death at 41.
Yeah.
Just there's something about that just is, you know, he's supposed to be inducted, or he's expected to be inducted into the Hall of Fame next year.
Oh yeah, there's no question.
Like, it's just
it's awful. And also what he did, one of the things that he did, which I enjoyed, because, you know, I mean, I wasn't a Kobe fan per se. I was a basketball player. I'm talking about. I respected him, though you couldn't help him, but, you know,
right?
I wasn't really his style of hoop isn't always as aesthetically pleasing to me as like LeBron, but
because it's more technical.
Yeah, and he shoots a lot more, but whatever. Like that's dumb shit to talk about, right? So, but what I love that he did that Jordan never did is, and he, Magic kind of did it, but the Magic got so deep into the business, I don't know how much he could do it. Is Kobe really was becoming the NBA OG.
Yeah.
Like, he was an ambassador. Like, he was absolutely an ambassador.
And all the play, LeBron, Wade, like, they looked up to him. Like, that was, like, the OG. Like, whenever he was on the sideline, like, him and LeBron would be talking to each other, like, during the game. And he always had his daughter with him. Like,
right.
And now you're hearing all these NBA players. Even young guys like Trae Young, who's a rookie in Atlanta. You know, so he's Trae's, like, 20.
Right.
Maybe 21 at max. And he's like, yo, Kobe used to call me all the time.
Yeah.
Talk to me. And Kyrie Irving couldn't even play yesterday. Like, he found out and bounced. He's like,
that was his man. You know,
that was his man for real. And on the OG shit, like, he, like, Kobe raised him in the league. You know,
yeah, my man. I have a friend of mine that actually I remember, like, years ago. He was, you know, he's a really great basketball player. He went to, like, this exclusive camp for, like, all the nationwide juniors.
Okay.
Guys that were going into their senior year.
Okay.
And he came back, and we thought he was the fucking best thing since sliced bread.
Uh-huh.
He came back and was like, yo, I've seen the best basketball player I've seen in my life.
And that was Kyrie.
It was Kobe.
Oh, it was Kobe. Oh. Kobe.
He was in the camp with Kobe.
Wow.
And he, you know, he said that he had gone to a game, like, recently, saw him, because he was a coach. You know, and not in the NBA, but he was, you know, he's in the coaching ranks, he's in basketball.
Yeah.
He said, you know, he remembered him, gave him a pound.
Yeah.
Like, you can, like, those guys, and this is why I always say, that fraternity of those guys is extremely small. They remember everyone because they really do grow up with each other.
Yeah.
See the same people at all the camps, at all
the camps. Oh, this is why when people say, you know, oh, you know, the NBA is this or the NBA is that, I'm like, you guys kind of don't really understand
how this works.
How this kind
of, like, these niggas know each other. Like, LeBron, Carmelo, these niggas know each other since high school. Like, 10th grade, 11th grade.
It's very different from football in that regard.
Yeah.
It's very different from football in that regard. Yeah, but yeah. One thing I was going to say about Kobe, so yesterday, you know, as everybody's posting tributes, except for Larry Johnson's whack ass, posting conspiracy theories. But he's ridiculous. One of the tributes I found most interesting was the one from Shaq.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Kobe and Shaq had their issues. Relationship, right? But it really was kind of a brother relationship, even in the sense that, like, sometimes you hate your, like, I hate mm-hmm. this motherfucker type
yeah.
shit, right?
Yeah.
But it might have been Shaq. If it wasn't Shaq, someone else said Kobe had no friends on the court, but off the court, he was beloved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I do remember watching Kobe, because I'm technically, I think I'm right in between Jordan and Kobe. Like, I'm old enough that I was watching Jordan in his prime, mm-hmm. but obviously we watched Kobe's career from the very beginning. And Kobe was only, you know, was right behind me in school, like I said, only 3 years younger than me. But, you know, for me, there was a lot of years where I was just like, Kobe's a dick, you know, mm-hmm. because that was the thought. Like, Kobe will hog the ball, you do this, that, you know, mm-hmm. like that type of thing. But now, like you guys said, he became an ambassador. He was much better at the politics of this all than Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
He was much better at, like, the public facing. I mean, Jordan obviously was a star, but I think Kobe did much better of being accessible to me.
Yeah, like, Jordan. I've never heard stories of Jordan reaching out to, like, young guys and being like, yo, blah, 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 blah. Like, you know, even now, like, Jordan don't really fuck with LeBron.
Right.
Like, they don't hate each other, but, like, he kind of looked at LeBron like, whatever, nigga. Like,
I mean, in fairness, you know, in fairness, what I think we also have to consider is that Kobe is, you know, in close proximity and
is in age and in
generation, right?
True.
So, you know, Mike's got to be, what, 60 now?
Yeah, he's 55,
60.
Yeah,
like
67, yeah.
You know, Mike.
Mike's old nigga.
He's an old nigga, right?
Yeah.
And he hangs with the other old niggas. He going to be with Barkley.
Barkley and
Jordan, with Magic.
Yeah, old niggas.
So I don't think he's ever had that sort of that sort of spirit, and I think Kobe got that as he aged. You know, Kobe still has some level of asshole in him, and I think it's okay to say that.
I think he would have said that.
Yeah, I think that was kind of what it was. He just didn't accept anybody that he felt like wasn't doing. That was his. Honestly, that was his issue with Shaq.
Right.
Like, if you really go back to the interviews,
Shaq was lazy.
Shaq
was lazy, coming overweight.
Yeah.
He wouldn't rehab in this offseason, all of that sort of stuff. You know, I mean, look, man, there were a bunch of people, you know, also that talked about, you know, canceling games and how the NBA should have just, you know, pulled the plug on yesterday. And I would also say that even in the NBA in the front offices and in the league offices, those are people that matriculate through that company, right?
Right.
So they don't really hire outsiders. So the people who are in charge are people who have been in place since this guy's kind of come into the league. They know him. I mean, he came into the league, I think he was, what, 18?
He was 18 right out of high school.
Yeah.
He was 18. Mm-hmm. Like, this was,
he was actually 17 when he came.
This was a kid, mm-hmm. like a child, for real.
Yeah.
And they watched him grow, and they saw him literally become the face of their game and become an ambassador for basketball internationally,
mm-hmm.
all of those sorts of things. So they also have feelings. Like, they're also distraught. They're also thinking about, you know, Vanessa and his wife and his children.
Yeah.
That is a, you know, those, they know those people.
And let's not forget, his dad played in the league. So it even goes deep. Joe Jellybean Bryant. So the lineage goes even further, like Sean said, in those offices. It's like, I played with your father.
Right. You know,
like Kareem did a tribute yesterday, and he said, he's like, yo, I was close with Joe. Like, that's right. My man. Like,
yeah.
But, like, it goes back, his lineage in basketball goes back to, like, the 60s when his dad was, you know, was coming through.
I think with the cancellation of the games thing, like, I was on the fence about it too, because I get that logistically it's not that easy, right? Like, Kobe literally died before, like, around noon, like, between 11, like, around 11 o'clock PST.
Yeah.
So, obviously, it was not that easy to just say we're going to cancel games, especially because basketball is a really tight schedule. It's it's not like football where you got 5 weeks and all that shit. So, but, you know, one of my friends was like, well, what about when players, moms and sisters and whomever die and they keep going? I'm like, that's an individual person. This impacts the entire league. Yeah. Like,
that's rescheduling. It's,
yeah.
It's TV money. Like, it's all kind of shit.
But I also mean, like, the grief impacts the
entire league. Yes.
You know,
well, I think that it would have been fair. Not one person would have frowned for the people who were impacted to have sat out that game.
Like right. How Kyrie bounced.
And literally now, take like, a bereavement day.
Yeah, yeah. Just all the players crying, like putting the mic in Doc Rivers' face. Like that was kind of
fucking. It was grief porn. And
yeah,
and
I understand you got to ask them, but it just seems so exploitive.
But like, I don't know. But that's the thing. I don't know that you got to ask a man who is a grown-ass man who is in tears, who is broken up. Hey, how do you feel?
It's very clear.
It's very clear and evident. And that's the thing that I think that is sort of lost here, right? Is that, like, I get it, you know, these journalists, it's about clicks and sound bites. And those are the things that drive their careers. And so they're, you know, unfortunately, the public has made the pressure of those jobs to be getting those bites.
Yes.
And they're put in that sort of position to where they have to ask those questions because someone will. And if they don't ask that question and the next guy does, then it's their ass being chewed out.
Yeah.
And so I think it was pretty clear. I think it was pretty obvious. You know, when people say things like, hey, you know, we're going to pull the game, I think that that's an emotional decision. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's a wrong decision, but it is definitely an emotional decision.
Yeah.
Because because now, right, like, let's just say for the sake of numbers, what are you doing with the 6 hours of programming that you've just pulled from the network?
Exactly.
So now, what NBA TV did was they just had Brian Shaw and who played with Kobe.
Yeah, played with Kobe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They had Brian Shaw. I can't remember who were the other, and like their regular hosts. And it was just like, you know, I had the TV on for like an hour. And it was just like a loop of the same sort of grief-stricken. I'm like, who wants to do this for the next five hours? For like 5 hours, man. Like that is just wild to ask of anyone. You know, we won't even get into the fact that, you know, look, I understand this isn't necessarily about money. I mean, the gate that comes into an NBA game is really ashtray money. It's not a lot of money in comparison. I think the owners can take a hit on that. But I think it then becomes a logistical thing. Like,
it is a logistical thing.
Legally, how do we back out of this? Do we refund the tickets?
Do we refund all these tickets?
There's also advertising dollars. Contracts with the networks. And so that brings me, Sean, to a great point, which is people who are saying that the Grammys should have been canceled.
Well, that's...
Hours before the fucking red carpet opened. So... Okay, I'm going to assume that none of our listeners were people who were saying this, but some people were really legit, like, they should cancel the Grammys. So the first thing I'm going to say is that Whitney Elizabeth Houston died at approximately 6 p.m. the night before the Grammys, and the Grammys still happened. If that shit happened, Kobe dying is not going to cancel the Grammys. I understand that Staples is the house that Kobe built, but the Grammys are not about Staples, and they're not about sports. You know, Staples is the venue. And I do see that fans made their way. I do think it was very futile for the Grammy or for Naris to put out a statement or whoever put out a statement asking that fans not come to the Staples.
That's dumb. That was just dumb.
That was actually stupid. I understand why they said it, but that was stupid.
Yeah.
That probably actually just encouraged more people to come if we keep them in a buck. But I get it. Logistically, fans were starting to gather down in the area just as the carpet was opening. So I'm sure that was a nightmare. Yeah. You can't just, the amount of people, artists, camps, talent, everything that goes into making the Grammys happen.
You can't just
on Sunday be like, all right, never mind. We're going to pay for all these hotel rooms. We're going to pay for all this ground. We're going to pay for all these stylists. We're going to pay for all these flights. We got all these musicians. We're just going to pull it. And to Sean's point, then you got a programming issue because people air the red carpet and the Grammys themselves. So then what are you doing about that? Mm-hmm. Then how are you getting all these people back again? And when? You can't do this again until March or April, maybe, because people may be on tour, but you got Super Bowl coming, you got All-Star coming, you got the Oscars coming.
Oscars,
like, it's not that easy to just be like, fuck it, cancel the Grammy, ship the awards to people. It's not.
What I recognize is that for a lot of people who operate in very traditional workspaces, they don't deal with the kind of things that entertainment deals with. And and I say that with no disrespect. I'm not saying that their job is any less important or that they can't comprehend it. I just don't think that they operate with the same level of magnitude on what that means and how that impacts people and the trickle-down effect that it can impact people. Like, for example, you have people that work at those venues, that at the basketball arenas. So are we now telling, you know, Sharon and Tad that, you know, who sells the sodas and the popcorns are we telling them now they lose a day of income? Yeah, you get 41 days of income
from the NBA, right? The PAs who work freelance, like, this is work that they pick up. The
ushers.
Ushers. Like, there's
parking lot attendants.
The drivers. The reach is vast.
There's a whole ecosystem. Yeah. Like, by the time I'll see an award on a war show on television, there's been, well, first of all, there's been months of pre-plan, but there's been a whole week of rehearsals and activity and logistics and setup. And there's so much, like, all, like, the amount of money that's been spent by the time that shit goes live, you can't just eat that and say, we're going to do it all again.
Do it another time.
In a couple of months. You cannot.
It doesn't work that way.
Even money that artists are paying out of pocket for overage costs. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much, like, the production, there's so much to it. You can't just be like, nah, we're going to cancel.
I think
tomorrow night is going to be, I guess coincidence is the only word I could think of, but it's just coincidentally, tomorrow night, the Lakers are playing the Clippers, obviously at Staples Center. I believe that's a TNT game. So tomorrow night will be the first time we'll publicly see LeBron, well, the whole Lakers organization, because they played Saturday where LeBron passed Kobe on the scoring list. Kobe sent them a great text about it. And so this is the first time we're going to see the Clippers played last night, actually, and lost because their heads run into it. So tomorrow night's going to be the first time we're going to see the Lakers organization in motion after this. I'm assuming that Adam Silver and the commissioner and some other people will be there. Magic and all these people will be there. I'm obviously going to be some type of tribute. This will be the first time if he works, and I kind of think it's 50-50 that we'll see Shaq if he works tomorrow night on the TNT broadcast. Barkley, I think it's going to be a real roller coaster of emotion tomorrow night watching that game. It was going to be a big game anyway because those are the two best teams in the league, but now with this, it turns into a moment.
Yeah.
An event.
I think that the NBA has a history of acknowledging people. And I don't think that it's gonna, like, listen, I think that, you know, if I had to bet that they would probably go dark whenever his services are.
You think so? You think it'll be public?
I think. Well, no. I mean, I think the league might go.
Yeah, because like I'm sure pretty much the whole league is going to be trying to go to the service.
That's kind of my point, right? Yeah. So it's not just that. It's just also it gives them a little bit of time to prep. They can they can manage some things. They can move things around. Yeah. They can figure some things out to properly pay respect. Again, I don't think that this is. An easy decision. And again, I think that guys like Adam, you know, Adam Silver didn't wake up out of nowhere and become the NBA commissioner.
Yeah.
He was under David Stern for like 20 something years.
Absolutely.
These are guys that know Kobe. They're not just colleagues.
Yeah.
You know, I know a guy who played in the NBA.
Boss man shit.
Yeah. I know a guy who played in the NBA, worked at the league office and has worked in front offices in the NBA. And he always talks about how it is such a small fraternity. Like, when you're in, like, they are really connected in a way that I don't think a lot of people really kind of understand.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's like, dude, we're talking about a workforce of what? Maybe 500 people, including coaches.
That's what I'm saying, because the team's only 12, you know, there's 12 players on the team. I've seen the coach select. It's not football, but it's like a 53-man roster.
Yeah.
You know, somebody can kind of get lost.
We're talking about 500 people, 500, 600 people in the workforce, right? Yeah. Like, that's a very small amount.
Yeah.
And that also speaks to, you know, the wives posting yesterday in support of Vanessa.
Of course.
Which, oh my God, I can't.
The daughter, daughter being gone is just fucking Jesus Christ.
I do see some people. What do you guys think about people who are calling to change the NBA silhouette from Jerry West to Kobe? Do you think that would ever happen?
I don't know if that'll happen, but I do. The thing that's more likely to happen, and again, it's not easy, but the thing that's more likely to happen is retiring.
His numbers forever.
His numbers forever. Mark Cuban from the Dallas Mavericks announced that he's done it already as far as his team goes.
Right.
Nobody will ever wear 8 or 24 again.
Is 23 retire forever?
No, Jordan's not retired. LeBron wears 23.
Yeah, LeBron wears 23.
Yeah, right. So it's hard because there's guys wearing those numbers as we speak.
Right now, right.
But I think that will be I think if anything happens, I don't think the logo will change. I don't think, but I think it is likely that if I had to pick one, I think the likelier one would be for at least one of those numbers to be retired.
Yeah, I would guess the forever. 8.
Yeah, maybe the 8. One of them would be retired forever. So,
one other thing I wanted to say. Well, I want to make one mention to the fact that yesterday was a prime example of irresponsibility and being the first to report something in the story. So TMZ broke the news like right after the crash, but Sean, by the time you went to look at it, the story had been pulled, right? So you were hoping. It turns out that they pulled the story because the families had not been notified yet. So they named Kobe before, you know, police got a chance to get there, before anything. And this is the thing about TMZ. They usually are right, unfortunately, but in their haste to be the place that breaks this shit first, the level of
they're reckless. They write, but they're reckless.
I think that the blame here, I think TMZ should carry some of that blame,
especially
considering that they are, you know, looking to be recognized as a legitimate, you know, I don't think that they're just operating in this crackpot vacuum, right? I think that they look for some air of legitimacy. And I think that with that air of legitimacy comes some level of responsibility. But I think the important part here is that if the sheriff wants to chastise someone, what he needs to do is to subpoena or check the phone records of
the first responders.
That's what I would be doing.
Yeah.
Okay, because there is no rational reason for a first responder to get to that place and understand the severity.
Yeah.
Like, we are not talking about a DUI. We're not talking about a fucking bar fight, guys.
Right.
You know, we're talking about 9 dead souls.
Yeah.
We don't know who those, you know, maybe they recognized Kobe.
Right.
Yeah, maybe they recognize the something on the copter or whatever.
Something, whatever it was.
Your first thought should have been to start texting.
Your first thought was to TMZ, right?
Yeah.
So that is just such a that to me is just crossed the line in a way that is just disgusting, and they should be obviously reprimanded. I don't know what that protocol is. I'm sure it's not calling news outlets.
Right. Well, the other thing that really struck me about TMZ's reporting is that it was so callous. I think the headline was like, Kobe Bryant dead in helicopter crash. Everybody else died too. Like, it was so.
Yeah.
Was yes, because so, I think I think that the person who called TMZ physically recognized that it was Kobe in that.
Okay. In the wreckage.
And that's what happened. They basically, or maybe they recognized the plane. Maybe they know his particular helicopter. But, you know, I mean, I think that's the world we're living in now. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know who's, you know, I know we can throw the responsibility on them, but also are we to blame in the way we crave
the way we crave this shit?
Right. Because it started a pattern, right? Because then it's like people were like, all Kobe's daughters were on the plane. Then
Rick Fox was on the plane.
Like, it was just so much. And it's not, and that, I will say, it's not even about a social media thing, because I was saying yesterday, I remember when Aaliyah died, at one point, we thought Hype was on the plane. We thought Fame was on the plane. Mm-hmm. So it's not, that's not even necessarily a social media thing. It's just people tend to take stuff and keep like, and then this happened, and the blah, blah.
It's telephone. Know,
like, yeah, it's telephone. It's a game of telephone. But it was just really heartbreaking, you know, to go through that wave of emotions before finally circling back around to it being confirmed that Gigi was on the plane. And I guess everybody would notice by now, but it's also eerie because there was a meme of Kobe and Gigi that just went viral, you know, a couple of weeks ago, where
him explaining some game, basketball game,
explaining some game to her. And that was what finally took me out, was just like watching all the footage and the photos of the two of them.
Yeah, because she went with him to pretty much every time he went to a game, she was there.
He was with him.
She was with him. Yeah, I mean, you know, Vanessa didn't win sometimes, but she went to every game.
Like, she was a baller.
Like Trae Young said that, like, she told him he was her favorite player. Like, he was fucked up, not to try to make it a competition thing.
Right.
Like, he was more fucked up about Gigi, like, even in Kobe. Right. He was like, yo, like, I used to talk to this little girl, like, every time I came to L.A., like, she was a game. Like, you know, like, it's, you know.
So, and before we move on, I do want to give a proper respect to the names of those people that we know passed on.
Thanks, Sean.
Joe, Kerry, and Alyssa Altobelli, that was the baseball coach. I believe they had two other children that obviously weren't on the plane. That they survived. There was another woman who was an assistant coach with the Mamba, girls team, Christina Mauser.
Okay.
She also passed away, as well as another mother and daughter, Sarah and Peyton Chester.
Yeah.
So this is just, you know, this is just wildly tragic. I mean, we are talking about multiple families that are. Yeah. Just shredded, man.
Shredded.
We don't know who the pilot was, and obviously, you know,
his family as well.
Dealing with that, you know.
Yeah. And that basketball coach, she has three additional daughters, too.
Wow.
You know, who lost their mom and sibling. I mean, it's just, it's something so far beyond sad. My chest was literally heavy.
Yeah, it was fucked up.
Yesterday, just thinking about it. It's just impossibly sad, but also, like, and just on so many levels, like, the loss of family, a life cut short, you know, a great athlete, just culturally, even if you just think about memes and references and like the Mamba Method commercial. And I just posted this clip of Kobe and Jalen from this commercial the other day. Like, Kobe had great comic timing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he had, you know, he was inspirational and motivational. Like, he just had so much to contribute.
I mean, he's had the, I didn't even know he had the Mamba Academy where kids went and played ball. I didn't know that existed. Like, it's like a big thing out there.
And even that was a joke of like a few months ago, because he fake complained about one of his players, you know, everybody's like Kobe, like dressed down his 12-year-old. But, you know, but that was who he was. And I mean, it's just, but even, you know, there's a whole generation of niggas who've been throwing, you know, trash in the basket, yelling Kobe.
Yeah.
For 20 years. You know what I mean? It's just, it's like Greg right now is figuring out a tattoo. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, it's just, it's painful on many layers. And I'm not a huge Kobe fan, but I appreciate, like, anybody who left that kind of impact.
Yeah, you got to respect it.
You got to respect it. And I just want to give one more shout, and then we can move on. This guy named Youssef, hold on, I want to say his name correctly. This guy named Youssef Hanoun, I just discovered his clips last night, but years ago he did a series of videos, I think maybe almost like 4 or 5 years ago, that literally compared game footage of Kobe and like, literally shot.
How they run the same and everything.
It literally, same places in the court, same shot, same move. Like, it's very eerie. And I discovered one of his clips last night, and it's just so well edited and so well done. I cannot imagine how much game tape he had to watch to put it together. But it shows how well Kobe studied Mike and emulated him, you know. And I just wanted to give him a shout out, because I put it, it's on my Twitter page, it's like, it's got like 100, it's like crazy in like the views right now. I didn't expect, but he thanked me this morning because he was saying he was so heartbroken that he was happy that I gave his clip like new life. It was at like 225,000 likes or something. But I just wanted to shout him out because that footage is so well done and it just so speaks to like Kobe's skill.
Mm-hmm.
And his greatness. And you're right, his half court game. The half court game is a wrap.
Yeah.
They don't do that anymore.
No, it's 3-pointers and down the other end. Yeah, so let's try to let's move on and try, I don't know, lighten the mood. I don't know if that's the right term, but so both of y'all saw Bad Boys, right?
Yes.
Okay.
You seen it yet?
Yes, yeah, so I saw it this weekend. Yeah, so I'm going to talk about it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Bless both y'all because y'all didn't do no spoilers, which I appreciated. But both of y'all said y'all had, you really liked it. And keeping a trill, even as much as y'all said you liked it, I still was a bit skeptical when I went in, like, all right, see what this is really about. But I might be my favorite one. Like, I really enjoyed it.
That's the thing. It wasn't just so much that. But notice, I think what I came out and said, it wasn't even that I said it was a good movie. It was fun.
Fun.
Like, that was my thing.
It was enjoyable.
It was very enjoyable.
It wasn't even like I was like, and it's not that it was a bad movie, don't get me wrong. But I definitely wasn't going in there for cinematic value. Because the thing about Bad Boys. I went back and watched the other two. The main plot line is always trash. But the subplot is always about the relationship.
Yeah, Will and Martin.
That's really the real story. And then this one, too, the main plot line was kind of like, it's a reach. But the other one was two niggas is going to Cuba and getting kidnapped, doing all kind of shit. But the subplot, which is about the relationship and the friendship and the brotherhood, is really great. And I mean, I also went, it might also matter that I went at Magic Johnson. The theater was packed.
I went at Magic, too.
Yeah. And I don't know if it would have been the same in a different crowd, but like,
I
had fun. Like, when I walked out, I was like, that was fun. Yeah. Like, I laughed a lot. Yeah. Like, Martin was bringing the Big Mama Martin out.
Yeah.
You know, when you got the Big Mama character from, he's that nigga.
Yeah.
They play, and I said when they announced the sequel, I was like, if Martin's not on some Danny Glover shit, this whole movie, I'm calling bullshit. Like, I'm too old for this. And it was perfect. I thought
one of the things that got me right away, was when I saw Reggie.
Reggie.
And he's in the service now and all that.
Started clapping.
I was like, you got him. It's like, that's the same kid, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't
even
know if he even has acted since then, but like, I was happy to.
I don't think he is. I was actually going to do a Google search to see this nigga really
that
in the Marines. He might have really went to the Marines.
Yeah, for real. Because I don't think I've never seen him in anything. But that's when I was like, okay. Oh, and then sidebar, y'all probably wouldn't notice, but the guy that plays, I can't put a blank on his character now, but the guy who Martin said he coached in basketball, that guy is actually he definitely has probably the top three biggest sneaker collection in the world.
Oh, word?
His name is Demare. Yeah, like in the.
Of course you know that. I would not know that.
Yeah, exactly. Y'all might not know, but in the sneaker world, like, he's like a god.
World.
And he's not an actor. Like, I was stunned. First of all, I was like, I didn't know the mayor was in this movie. And then how big his role was. Like, he had a real role in the movie.
Yeah,
it was like a few lines at Khaled or something. Like, he had like a real role, but now he does like a deal with Nike. Like, he's crazy in the sneaker world.
I did say, and I'll say this for listeners, even though I think our listeners are all older, the one thing I did tweet when I came out was that if you're trying to walk into this as a standalone, which I think some younger fans might do because it's been 15 years.
Yeah.
Over
15 I didn't realize it was that long.
Well, all of them were really far apart because it was like 8 years between the first one and the second one, eight or nine.
Was it?
It was 95, 2003. 2003,
And now then, it's 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
So like it's been.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so I was like, if you can't walk into it, you could walk into two without having seen one, but you cannot walk into three without having seen one and two because the whole plot point is the relationship dynamics.
Yeah, and the subtleties, like with Teresa Randall and like.
Yeah, in order to catch the Reggie reference, you know what I mean?
Like, exactly.
And one person tweeted me back and said she watched the two with her 18-year-old son, 20-year-old son, and he hadn't seen the other two. She said there were multiple times where he kept saying, oh, now that makes
sense. Now it makes sense, like, exactly.
Understand why Cap is flipping out.
Yeah, so exactly.
To understand all of that, you have to have seen.
You have to have seen it from the beginning.
Yeah,
but now I really enjoyed it. You know, like you said, the plot lines. And just sidebar, at the wedding, the guy that did the speech, was that Michael Bay? That was Michael Bay, right? There was a white guy that did a speech.
Yeah, at the,
I think that was Michael Bay. Like, random white man here as the MC of the.
That was Michael Bay. I was like, people didn't really catch that. That's him. Yeah,
because most people don't know what Michael Bay looks like.
Exactly.
But you know, now that you say that, Michael Bay looks exactly like I would expect Michael Bay.
Exactly. To look like.
Yeah, I just thought it was. I thought it tied together all three really well. Will and Martin's chemistry is still fantastic.
Yes, awesome.
They play off of each other really well. And I want to give a shout out to Sean, because Sean, I did not notice this until you brought it up. So when we're all talking after the fact, Sean's watching One, which made me go back and watch One. And One was the first Bad Boys was Martin's vehicle, and Will stole the whole franchise because it was the year before Independence Day. So Will was not like the
He wasn't Mr. July yet.
Yeah, he wasn't the guy he is now. Yeah.
And like And Martin had top billing.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing. And now they done killed off Martin's kids. He had two more kids.
Yeah. He had a full family. Like, yeah.
Yo, but they kill one every.
They kill one every
joint that goes down. Yeah.
Like, God damn.
In the second one.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You said then the first one was really about Martin being like this family man.
Yeah.
Who was this wild cop on, you know, outside of the family. And Mike Lowry was like the wild uncle.
The crazy thing is, the first one, Martin saves the girl.
Right.
He jumps in front of the bullet. He gets the car. Saves Will.
He saves Will in this. Actually, I noticed that. I'm going to have to watch three again, but he ends up saving Will at one point in the second one, too, because Will's about to get shot. And because the first one, Will's like, that's how you drive a car. And the second that's how you shoot. So I think it happened in the third one too. Like, Martin has to finally give in and come over to Will's side, and like, killer instincts kick in.
Yeah.
Like, the formula works. Like, what I loved about 3-2 was that, you know, there are iconic shots in the movie that they made sure to put in. There are iconic lines in the movie. Like, there's a car moment. There's that shot, that pan shot where they both stand up next to each other.
Yeah, with the slow motion and all that. Yeah.
In there.
That was great. I enjoyed it. It was great.
Shout out to Will for getting a box office smash again, because he needed that shit.
He needed it. Yeah. And then just back to basketball real quick. I wanted to just give a quick shout out to Delonte West, who was a NBA player for maybe 6-7 years, bro. Probably about that.
A decent career.
He was a
superstar. I haven't heard that name in a minute.
Yeah, was a superstar, but you know, solid player. You know, I don't think he won a chip, but he was in the championship finals when he played with Cleveland with LeBron. But he's always had mental health issues, and it's gotten worse over the years. And there was a clip that was floating around last week of him, you know, getting like beat up in the street and arrested, and he looked terrible. He's from the DMV area, which I think he's still kind of floating around. And then Danny Ainge, who he played for in Boston, revealed that he had given Delonte a job as a scout. Like, just be a scout down in the DC area. Like, let us know what's going on. And, you know, Delonte couldn't really kind of handle the responsibilities and stuff. So, but the NBA is definitely, like Sean said, is this very small community and fraternity. And a lot of people were reaching out to try to help him. So I hope that that's happening, because it was a sad
sight. That was really sort of tough to watch. And I do just want to chime in again,
terrible, because man.
You know, people were like, you know, the NBA needs to come in and do something, and I'm just like, it's just like this whole.
What y'all want to do?
Yeah, I don't really understand what you want the league office to do. And like you said, Jeff, people, like, these are not new issues for Delonte.
Yeah, they've tried to help him over the years. He refuses to help.
Yes, like, people reach out all the time. Even if I'm not mistaken, I think even Lamar, when Lamar was going through some of his darkest days.
Yeah.
You know, they send folks out there. There's outreach out there. Like, it's not like these guys are just sort of aimlessly, you know. He's a veteran player. Like, I'm sure dude is like pension level
He's a pension level guy.
There's
some services there. So I think it's important to understand that, you know, for a lot of people with addiction, man, like addiction and mental issues, it's not as easy, right? Like,
it ain't
as easy. You can snap your finger, but the NBA can't do anything
if you don't want
money, right? Yeah, they can't do anything that anybody else is doing you, but offering you more money.
Yeah, they can't grab him off the street. And again, if he wasn't ready for whatever reason to accept the help, like I said, Danny Ainge talked about it. And Danny Ainge just revealed this when this clip came out. It wasn't like Danny Ainge was bragging.
Yeah.
You know, he was like, yo, like, I, you know, we've done some things. And other people have too. He just, if he's not ready, then he's not ready.
He's not in that space.
So exactly.
We wish him well, and we hope that he gets the help that, you know, he needs.
Exactly. I wanted to mention we didn't get the tape last week, so there's a couple of things that we didn't get to talk about. One of the things I wanted to mention was the Tyler Perry movie, A Fall from Grace, which came out, I guess, about two weeks ago?
Last weekend, I think.
Was it last weekend? Okay, yeah. It's
pretty, I think it was like last Friday.
Yeah, it was recent. It was whatever it was. It was, it was recent. Maybe it was a King weekend, maybe?
Yeah, it was last weekend.
Yeah, so
it was last weekend.
So Tyler Perry's done a deal with Netflix, one of his 2 million deals he has, but he's done a deal with Netflix to provide original content to them. I believe there's also going to be a couple of sitcom type series coming from him as well. But he's done the first installment on the deal is this movie, A Fall from Grace. Which stars, I'm totally blank on the woman's name. She's the star of Have and the Have Nots as well.
I don't know her name. But also Makai Brooks.
Makai Brooks, yeah.
Scandalized with that fucking Larry Blackman wig. I'm really stressed out.
So this movie comes on, last weekend, King Weekend. So people were off work. People had time to relax and watch. You know, it's winter, so people aren't going out as much. People had time to watch. And it quickly became a huge trending topic and a talking point and what's some shit's called? People write the think piece point and a debate point.
I don't know. Was anybody really think piecing it or debating it seriously?
Yeah, people.
Tyler Perry's art.
Yes. It was think piecing Tyler more than the movie in and of itself. But they were using the movie coming out as a way to think piece Tyler. So I had issues with the think pieces. Now, you know, everybody who listens to this show knows that I like Tyler, and I'm really an 83-year-old black woman. So I watch all these shows named Edna, and I watch all these shows. But, yeah, so I'm going to start because I know Nine Sean got their things to say. So the wigs were a disaster. Right, we ain't. I ain't got to discuss that. They were.
Oh, I'm gonna discuss it.
Goddamn it! Well, let me rephrase that. I'm gonna leave the wigs to you.
Okay.
but I'm gonna acknowledge that the wigs were a disaster. And when I forget her name, sorry, ma'am. But when she got in the shower with the wig on, I was like, bruh, you can't do this, man. You can't. You do, like at this point, I'm like, Tyler, you doing this shit on purpose, bro. Like, you know, you're obviously way too smart to know people are not going to talk. But the movie in and of itself, I actually enjoyed it. It was kind of like, in my opinion, a stepped up Lifetime movie or one of those Hallmark type movies or those other TV1 movies that come on. But with better production as far as like the filming and the look of the film and the look of the story. And I enjoyed it. It had a little plot twist at the end. If people haven't watched it, I'm not going to spoil it. Felicia Rashad is in the movie. She's always great. Cicely Tyson is in the movie. She's a legend. I actually figured out that plot twist pretty early. But I enjoyed it. Like it was, you know, it was 90 minutes or whatever. You know, Tyler. You know, I enjoyed the movie. You know, I enjoyed it, and I just think that what irked me about it was so many people were like jumping all over him, and I had a debate with a friend of mine, Peace to China. She's like, I said what I just said was like, this is basically like a stepped up version of a Lifetime movie to me. And she was like, the Lifetime movies have more depth. The character, I said, Charlie, you sound crazy. All the Lifetime movies are the same with some woman who comes to some small town, some small quaint town with no black people, and she falls in love with this mysterious guy, and he ends up trying to kill her. You know what I'm saying? And it's fine. And you watch it, and it's like, oh, shit, that's crazy. The ending was crazy. And she ends up, like, getting away or shooting a guy or whatever. I said, so it ain't no different than that, but it seems like people judge, you know, Tyler's stuff more than anybody else on such a different curve. And that's my issue. I'm not saying the movie's great, but I'm saying, like, if you love those white Lifetime movies, as a lot of people do, then I don't understand why this is such the worst shit you ever seen when you watch 40 of those.
But this is where you and I, this is where you and I differ.
This is where the road split.
Well, on the critique of Tyler, because people do pan those Lifetime movies. Like, they're the most formulaic shits ever. There are memes about them. People do criticize them, but also it might not be us as black people criticizing them because they're not for us, right? Like, but white people definitely trash Lifetime movies. I think that it's fine. I think that it's fine to critique. Here's the thing about Tyler's shit. Tyler's shit is camp, which is fine, but it's camp that he seems to want to be taken seriously. So, like, either you're going to shoot your shit in 5 days and put some bad weaves on people without properly securing, I mean, bad wigs on people without even properly using the right kind of glue and secure and tapering it down and blend and all that shit, or you want us to have to discuss your shit in the same vein as, like, some, like, a more, like, a longer and more serious production. Like, if you want to churn your script out by yourself in 72 hours and then shoot the shit in 5 days, that's fine, Tyler, you can do that, but then don't come on the back end and act like you're motherfucking Robert De Niro. I'm not Robert De Niro, but man, like, you're Martin Scorsese. Like, you got it. Like, it's gotta be one or the other to me, right? Like, if Tyler, you know, it's like with Madea, Tyler really wants to break away from Madea, but he can't because she's the centerpiece
of
his franchise, right? So there's, I think even Tyler has, and I don't mean to, like, shrink him, but I think even Tyler has, like, a issue with the fact that, like, he can't get away from a certain kind of storyline and narrative and still be successful, because he's tried to do more serious work. He's tried to be a serious actor. Like, when that shit happens, the success is just not the same. So lean into the camp if you want to, that's cool, but any art is subject to critique if you put it out in the world, and his shit deserves critique because he wants to be taken seriously. I appreciate his empire, I appreciate what he's built, but your art is campy, my dude. It looks like you shot it in 5 fucking days. Like, it does, and that's fine because you did, and I don't see what's wrong with pointing that out. Like, I couldn't even watch the whole movie because the shit is terrible, but people were but one thing that happened with it being on Netflix is that people who would not go into theaters to watch Tyler's
work watched it.
Watched it. But people were posting clips of, like, the guy who played the judge is sitting there with the scripts and playing. One of the guys who was an extra on the film was like, yo, I was these four different, no, he was an extra in Acrimony. He was like, I was these four different people in Acrimony, but I got a check, though.
Or the dude in the diner who kept standing to the camera.
Yeah, the guy in the diner who was eating and drinking air
and staring
directly into the fucking camera.
But I gotta believe that some of this shit, at this point, I'm overestimating, but I gotta believe Tyler's doing it on purpose.
If he's doing it on purpose, that's fine, but, like, don't come out and act like we need to really, like, you know, hold you up like you just made Moonlight. Like, I'm just saying, like, you, like, you, if you making camp, make camp, my dude. Like, Ryan Murphy makes camp, makes white camp, and it's well done because we all know it's tongue-in-cheek and it's supposed to be over the top and crazy. I think it's the fact that Tyler won't just admit that his shit is supposed to be over the top and crazy. Like, like, it is, clearly that's what you're doing, and the storylines are bad. They're just bad. He watched Dirty John on, actually I think it was on USA, which was the story about the dude who used to marry women and take all their money and everything. And he, I really feel like Tyler watched that shit, was like, oh, let me go write a black version of this right quick, and we got
dish. Go ahead, bro.
So there was a time in music, right, when we would hear rappers talk about how, yo, man, I did 25 songs in 3 days.
And I didn't write nothing down.
And I didn't write nothing down. And we'd be like, yes, nigga, we know.
Yes, nigga, it sounds exactly. It sounds exactly like that, and I think that that's what's happening here. I think that Tyler takes a level of pride in the, like, he didn't say we shot this in 5 days as a way to explain the issues. He was saying that with a sense of pride, with a sense of we're churning out material at a rate that is, you know, not comparable, right? Like, there's other place that's churning out a movie in 5 days.
Yeah.
So, but when you see boom mics and when you see things like, you know, wine being served at a diner, which, okay, all right. But like all of those sorts of things just seemed really, really weird and off. You know, the whole legal process seemed to have every attorney on Twitter, like in snitches. Like
that don't work. It don't go like that.
It doesn't at all. Like at all. Like you just, you didn't even.
You can't be calling witnesses to the stand when the judge.
After you closed and all that, you know, so, you know, all of those things aside, I think that the movie, I think the plot holes were obvious, right? Like the plot holes were an issue. You know, we still don't know how the fuck they got this 6'2", 200 and something plus pound man out of the fucking, you know, basement after she bashed his fucking head in, right? Like, we, you know, the whole sun was weird. Sun, like, you know, it was just unexplainably just.
And why was they driving that? Like, my man's a cop and Shorty's a public defender, and they driving like a Toyota Tercel. Like, I'm like, come on, bro.
Whatever, right? And then you kind of get to the production aspects, and I think that that's what people we're critiquing him on, which is at this level of, you know, now that you have this studio and now that you have all of these resources, you should not still have the same level of production that was occurring when you had none of those resources and none of those people at your beck and call, right? Like, to me, you know, that's a continuity guy. Like, she has slippers on, she puts slippers on, she comes downstairs, she has on no shoes. Wig guy, like, how, like I just, you know, there's sort of basic fundamental things, and I think what happens is that because he takes on so much of that,
some shit slips through the cracks.
Yes, it's bound to happen, right? Like, you literally can't run a production top to bottom and have it flawless on every end. So I think he's burning the candle on both ends. And I think that there's some level of, again, like Nas said, like, you have to kind of figure out what this is. Like, are you going to make these sort of cheesy, campy movies, which has a place and has an audience? Or are you trying to transition yourself into much more, and I'm using air quotes here, respectable, because I don't really like that word necessarily, but it's probably the best word for this. But you're looking to make respectable movies, like movies that are, you know, looked at and viewed in the same way as everyone else's. And I just don't know that him running the operation has panned out and shown us that what he does here when he leaves that Madea space, like Nas said, like, you don't really see the level of success here.
Right.
I'm curious to see what the numbers were.
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
we'll never know because Netflix doesn't release them.
But that's the thing about Netflix. Well, no, Netflix does release numbers when it behooves them.
Okay.
Netflix absolutely. Netflix told you what's the Sandra Bullock with the birds and you can't look outside.
Bird Box.
Bird Box and all that shit. Yeah, they was running them numbers. Then they told you what the numbers was for the Irishman. Didn't
True.
They?
True.
They tell True. You what those numbers are when it behooves them. The problem I think True. That you have with Tyler is that. This is one of those instances where I don't necessarily know that they can quantify it in a way, right? Like, because you're going to cross his demo. Like, the people that are watching that movie already have Netflix. No one came to Netflix.
Nobody knew signed up for Netflix.
That's my point. Yes.
Because Tyler Perry had joint dropping.
That's my point. So, yeah, you know, listen, and again, there is a place for his movies. I would rather see him.
Would you watch the next one?
I would watch the next one only because, you know, I personally understand what moving that needle is. And if I can in any way move the needle for him, I will.
Yeah.
You know what? And like we've said before, many a times, there are people who have certain genres of movies and they make bad movies. Look, like Jason Statham's movies are, I mean, that fucking plot line is as thin as a sheet of paper. Okay. And I watch every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that's just what I do.
You know what it is. You go in, you know what it is going in.
So why can't Miss Earlene
watch her Tyler
and yeah. watch, you know, watch her with Loretta Devine playing somebody's grandma and all that? Why can't they do that?
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I'm just saying, you know, it would really be great if you saw a growth in the level of writing. That's really, I think, the issue. The issue is that we don't really see growth. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I always felt. And not the I kind of juxtapose it with the music, but like, that was kind of the critique for Nas for a minute.
Yeah.
Like, you had this blast out of the water and then really see growth, right? Yeah. It was consistent.
Yeah, it was solid, but it wasn't.
Solid, but you didn't see growth. And I think that's really what people are critiquing. It's like, dude, you've got this massive studio, you're making all of this money. Who's your continuity person? Like, that's a simple
that's
thing.
That's the biggest problem. It's just like it's just attention to detail. That's the thing. Attention to fucking detail. There is no, like, as much detail as Tyler put into the opening of the Tyler Perry Studios, he does not put that same level of detail into his own goddamn movies.
Mm. But I think he looks at this in, and this is me completely talking shit, but I think he looks at this as a way for him to, you know, this is almost like a Ford assembly line.
Turn them out.
You churn them out.
Quantity over quality. Like,
and listen, that's not actually a bad business model in some cases, right? Like, if the needle is where it is and you're making your money and you're still able to, you know, he made those Madea movies for what, $5-7 million budgets? He was hitting 40 and 50 million dollars first opening week.
Killing them. So coming in number one.
So sure, he can make it a $15 million budget, right? But does that $15 million, does tripling his budget triple his first week? Does it triple the profit margin?
Yeah.
It doesn't, right? Yeah. Like, we know his audience is coming no matter what.
Yeah. So I'm gonna let you know in advance. Not a bad thing. I'm gonna give you the lead when this Issa Rae movie come out.
Yes, I'm so excited. Photograph.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
It comes out Valentine's weekend?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, so soon, a couple weeks.
So excited.
Yeah, they've shown a bunch of commercials last night on
Instagram. And you're gonna hate it because it's on some Love Jones shit.
You know what? I probably won't like the Lakeith Stanfield character at all. But I'm definitely gonna go.
You know what? I actually want to see the movie with her and what's my man name that was in Stuber?
Oh, the joint that looks like a crazy person between them.
The Bangladeshi cat.
The comedic version, it looks like the comedy version, the hijinks version of Queen and Slim to me.
I want to see that. I'm a rom-com dude. Like, I can fuck with a rom-com, like, trust me.
Yeah.
I don't like those, I don't like mushy love stories. I just don't.
Okay.
And again, God bless them. I think it's going to be a great movie. I think it will do well. It is awesome to see that next generation of black talent. You know, really getting those shots, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're not recycling the same, you know, five actors. And we're going to do a movie with Angela Bassett. We're going to do, you know what I'm saying?
Like,
let's start to put them in a different light. I love the idea of Issa not being goofy.
Yeah.
Once, like, I love her getting away from that because I think she's an attractive woman. I'd like to see her be, like, I said the same thing about Tiffany Haddish. Like, I would like to see them be in more
acting instead of
roles, right? Exactly. Like, I would love to see that. But I also want to see her be funny as well sometimes, which is why I'm going to go see the other movie. Like, that's some shit I'm going to see, like, opening weekend.
Yeah, right. You in there.
That's my speed. That's my bag right there.
Okay.
All that mushy shit.
Whatever, nigga.
I'm good.
So, Nye, be prepared.
I'll be ready.
I know you will. Quick, a couple quick music shout outs. I want to give a shout out to Whitney Houston and Biggie Smalls for entering the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
That was announced, I guess, a week and a half ago or so. So obviously happy for both of them. And did Shaka get in? Did Rufus get in?
I don't know.
I don't think they got in.
I don't think so.
I don't think they got in this year. They were up for it, but I don't think they got in. And then peace to Chad Hugo and Pharrell Williams for entering the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're going in. I think that's in April-ish or May-ish. I think the award ceremony is. So they got announced a couple weeks ago, about a week or so ago as well. So I want to give a quick shout out to both of them. And then I just want to mention one more thing before we get to the Grammys. This whole coronavirus shit, with everything else going on in the world, it weirdly feels under the radar for what's really going on. It's brutal. It's killing people left and right in China. The rumor, and I don't know how real
it is. China actually is building a new hospital. They started it on Thursday. It's supposed to be finished within a week, which apparently they also did when it was, what was the last one? SARS? Was that the last big one?
Yeah, I think SARS,
Same thing with SARS. And I'm like, they're building like a 1,000-bed hospital in a week because of the virus outbreak.
Yeah, so everybody in China is pretty much walking around with masks on. They've kind of quarantined a couple full cities. You can't travel in and out of China. You can't travel, especially in and out of these cities. As of now, the stats are it's sick in thousands and killed at least 80. But the death numbers seem to be wildly underreported, like you're saying.
I read 26. That's why 80.
CNN is saying it's killed up at least 80 now.
Well, I would be very interested to know how these things are being classified as causes of death, because if this is obviously attacking your immune system. I would assume that if you have a weak immune system from other issues,
it might be exacerbating
those other issues, and so it's just like when they say nobody dies from AIDS, right? Like you die from the complications, from
pneumonia, whatever.
Though that's what I'm saying. I wonder if those numbers are skewed because of that. But it's real.
It's very real. Yeah, there's been 5 confirmed cases in here in the United States. It's moved into the Ivory Coast in Africa. There's 2,700 cases confirmed in mainland China. There's 50 cases in 13 places outside of China. What I read is that this started because I guess in China they eat bats, and some type of virus in bats have started to spread, mutate and spread. Now, I don't know if that's, some fucking, over the top, scary talk or real, but it's...
I'm not 100%. I haven't read that, but...
I did see a clip of a woman eating a bat in China, and that shit was bonkers. But, I guess it's a delicacy.
I thought that was... I have to look into that, because I feel like it was tourists who go over there and do that dumb shit.
Could be. So this is scary because they don't seem to be able to contain this thing at all. So there's a patient in LA, there's a woman in Chicago, there's a woman in Washington State. So you said it's real and it's scary as fuck. So I might have to start wearing a mask or something. Man.
Immunize your kids.
Yeah, sure. That too. Yeah. So let's get on into the Grammys. So the Grammys came on last night. Live from the Staples Center in LA. Alicia Keys hosted. Billie Eilish cleaned up. We have performances by Lizzo, by Usher, by Lil Nas X, by Sean's favorite, Tanya Tucker.
let me not say nothing about Miss Tanya
because
I'm stealing tweets, right?
Yeah, exactly. By Demi Lovato, and I'm sure I'm blanking out on some Alicia Keys, of course.
Oh, and then Khaled and John.
Nipsey Hussle.
Nipsey. Yes. And Gary Clark Jr.
Yes.
And Alicia herself squeezed the performance in there. Which,
yeah, she stuck something in there, yeah.
What else? I see there was a Prince tribute. I missed it.
Yeah, that was Usher. That was Usher.
Okay, I didn't watch everything in real time. So okay. I like popped in and out to see what was going on.
My favorite performance
Didn't Run DMC and Aerosmith perform?
Oh, yes. Run DMC and Aerosmith. I forgot. So my favorite performances last night were Lizzo.
Okay.
She just did a great job. I mean, she's a great performer, you know. She's very fun, and she had these ballerinas come out and do this thing, but they were all, like, big girls.
Big girls, yeah.
You know, but you could tell they real ballerinas. Like, they was on the toes and all that. It wasn't right. Like, we're going to act like we know ballet. Like, these girls was ballerinas for real. It was just super dope, you know. It was, you know, obviously very black and very, you know, very fun. And then I just really liked Demi Lovato's performance. She kind of did an Adele thing where she started the song and I guess she couldn't catch a note, so she stopped.
Yeah.
But she didn't do the Adele thing, but she didn't talk to the crowd.
Right.
She wasn't like, I gotta start over. She just kind of stopped.
Yeah.
And looked back at, it was her and the piano player, looked back at him, and then, like, you know, she said something to him and then started again.
Well, that was Demi's first time on stage in 2 years.
Yeah. And I'm sure it was nerves and everything. And then the song, I gotta look, the song was called Anything. I don't know who wrote the song, but the way the song is structured, it's a hard song to sing. And you could tell that she kind of was trying to catch a groove. But once she caught that groove, she bodied it. Like, she fucking bodied it. And like you said, it's been her first time in 2 years, so it was a lot of emotion in her voice. It's a lot of emotion in her singing. She got a standing ovation. It's a beautiful song. It's a beautiful song. I was really, really impressed with her last night. Like, cause you said, you could tell she was struggling maybe the first 20 seconds or so, but once she caught that wave and started hitting those notes, it was like, whoa. I didn't even realize Demi could sing like that.
That, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, she sings like some Jessie J, like some real shit.
Didn't Ariana also sing?
Oh, yes. Ariana sang.
And her performed, which I did.
Oh, yes, Gabby Wilson, yes.
Yeah, I didn't, and shout out to Jeff Robinson, friends of the show, but I didn't love hers I didn't love her song selection last night as much as her did Rockin' Hard Place last year. Okay. And I just thought that was just like perfect. A definitive performance, like, because that song is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Last night's song, I mean, I love her performance always. It's always stellar. The song just didn't move me quite as much.
Okay. And yeah. Jeff,
like, she's coming out of her shell.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
the lenses are getting clearer.
Yeah, you can see her eyes now.
Like, slowly, it's kind of like when Alicia stopped wearing the braids. Like, she's slowly emerging out of.
Coming into herself, exactly. And Jeff mentioned something on Instagram about something about the performance didn't go quite right. He didn't say what it was.
I thought he was talking about the fact that she didn't win anything she was nominated for.
Oh, maybe that was it then. Maybe that was it.
He was like, even when things don't go your way, I think he was actually talking about the fact that she didn't win anything she was nominated for.
Okay, you might be right. I didn't like Usher's, I don't dislike Usher's performance, but it was very Vegas-y. It was very like something I would expect to see Usher do like at his residency in Vegas, which, again, it's fine. It's not bad. It was him, Sheila E., and FKA Twigs was like on a pole doing some dance performances. But right. It was very interesting, Usher, last night. Like, it was the first time he looked a little old.
He is old! I need him to really figure out where he's going to sit, right?
Yeah, I mean, even like his dance movements weren't as loose as they used to be. I know.
Game for 25
years. 25 years.
Like, he's an elder.
He also set such a standard.
True.
And what we're thinking about is we're thinking about 8701.
Yeah. Right.
We think about
you don't have to call and all that.
So he doesn't have gray hair. He hasn't gained weight. So we physically see
the same guy.
A young man, right? Yeah. We're still processing that as a young man.
Yeah.
He's 40. He still can move. Like, it ain't he's
you know, in a wheelchair.
I thought people were being a little harsh about that tribute. I thought people that were, like, ridiculing it and, you know, bashing it were a little harsh. First of all, Sheila E.'s on stage, okay? And she's the fucking gatekeeper.
Right. So it's official.
She's the gatekeeper, my nigga. And ain't nobody getting on that stage and doing nothing with that music if she's around that Prince wouldn't have been okay with.
That's real.
It ain't happening.
Yeah, that's
so real. So if she chose Usher, or if Usher was the person who was anointed to do that, then I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it wasn't bad. I agree with you, Jeff, because we kind of talked about it a little bit. Like, it was a little showy. It was a little Vegas-y.
But I
think that's where a lot of people's shows are going now.
Yeah.
And because, you know, the residencies.
You
know, all of that.
Like, money out there.
Hey, man, like, you know, the 90s was a long fucking time ago now.
20 years ago.
25
bro.
Years ago, right?
Yeah.
30 years ago, right?
Like, so, ago, yeah.
So, yeah, man, when we would see the fucking Bills at Dean Martin at the Flamingo.
Yeah,
nigga, well, you know, it's time.
Now it's Usher.
It's time for those acts now to go out there and do their 7 and 11 shows.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So that was what else did I like? I like,
and that was also, some people were asking why the Prince tribute now. So every year the Grammys does a tribute to an artist at like a couple of days after the, well, they tape it a couple of days after the awards and it airs.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Later. And this year's tribute is to Prince. So that was kind of like a little teaser. Like last year they did that Motown bullshit with J-Lo.
Yeah. Okay. Billy, like I said, Billie Eilish cleaned up. She had a huge year. I really like.
She split the vote between Lizzo and Lil Nas X on some of those categories.
I agree too, and I think Lil Nas X's song came out so early last year,
right?
That the steam, you know, obviously had faded by the time the Grammys started to do the voting. I do appreciate that Billie Eilish and her brother did this whole album just themselves.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like any outside production. So he's going to make a lot of money as a producer now. She'll make money as an artist and a writer as well. They're doing the new theme for the new James Bond movie. So that's a huge thing.
That's very dope.
Yeah, it's crazy big. So, and I think she's really talented. She's really talented. They're really talented. I like her. So I wasn't mad. I wanted Lizzo to win that Best New Artist, but I wasn't mad that Billie Eilish won it. I actually like Lil Nas X's performance too. Did you see it, Nye?
I gotta watch it.
It was good.
The performances good. I saw Alicia and Boyz II Men, which, you know, for those who were, there were a few people who commented, not that many people, a few people commented on like Boyz II Men being casual and stuff. Like, again, understand that Kobe died yesterday.
So yeah,
that
the same
was very
day.
Much like,
yeah.
We're gonna send the jet to get y'all over here. There's no time for like call a stylist, get wardrobe, like just come in and do the shit and leave. So that was that. And I saw her, and I saw Gary, and I saw, who else did I see? I saw somebody else, I can't remember. But no, I didn't.
It's Nas.
Lil Nas.
He was good. He brought Nas out, which was dope.
Oh, that's who Nas was out for.
Yeah.
I knew Nas was there, I didn't know who for.
Yeah, it's a remix of that. I think that came out last night. And so Nas was on the remix. So he had Nas, he had BTS, he had the little Mason Crosby, the little Yolen kid.
Yeah.
He came out.
That's good. I noticed him mentioning doing something with him at some point. That's
smart. Yeah. And then of course Billy Ray Cyrus. But he had
honestly, he could still just keep doing old town road remixes for fucking
forever. Yeah. And then he had this cool set because it kind of kept rotating slowly, and like he would go into another room and then another artist would be there or whatever. So I thought that was kind of cool. What anything you liked about it, bro? Anything you want to talk about?
I saw the Old Town Road. I mean, God bless. I wasn't moved or disappointed.
I had no
expectations. I really enjoyed Lizzo's performance. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a career defining moment
for her. I agree.
Just the sheer, just like you can see that she felt like she had hit a stride.
Yeah.
A little bit and was starting to, you know, maybe become comfortable.
Yep.
In her space. And I was happy with the winners. Again, I watched the Nip tribute. I thought that was, really moving, really big.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, those people are people that really rocked with him. So that's always a good thing.
And he won. And he won the rap album of the year.
Yeah. So, nice. You know,
I didn't see the actual award part of it. So
okay.
You know, I wasn't aware that he had won that. I know I saw when Khaled won whatever record he won. So
yeah,
it was fine. It was a Grammy show. It was a regular to me. It was a regular Grammy show. I was really, you know, DMC's voice is completely gone.
Gone.
Like all the way gone. Like he's actually just up there as a showpiece now because he really can't perform any vocals.
Yeah.
And it was, I will say it reminded me that seeing, Run DMC, I had done a tour with I was on a road with Mobb Deep and like Limp Bizkit, and it was Run DMC, and I got to see them on tour, like before Jay had, you know, was murdered and, you know, so I was glad seeing that made me really appreciate that I got to see such an iconic group in all their splendor. Right. And, you know, cause they didn't have it. Right. Like that wasn't it. It was
neither group had
none of them.
Yes, my point. Yeah, Aerosmith didn't have it either.
Aerosmith is 80. That was nostalgia. I said Aerosmith is 80. So yeah, nostalgia.
Yeah, neither one of them had it. I was like, this ain't working for me. I want it to work, but it ain't working. But I'm trying to think if there was anything else. There was nothing else. Kind of, you know, there was obviously a couple Kobe tributes, but there was nothing. It was a good show, but it wasn't a show that, like, you know, has, like, I don't think it had many quote unquote moments. It was just a good show.
It was also, you know, probably a.
But it was like somber because of the Kobe thing, if people weren't feeling so over the top excited.
The Grammys are in the middle of their own drama.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Having ousted the woman who took over Neil Portnoy,
Deborah Dugan.
Deborah Dugan. Mm-hmm. Having ousted her literally 10 days before the Grammys, which I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah, and she's been on, you know, on the news and stuff like that, talking about her side of things.
They had to tread a line. You know.
Yeah, and I mean for the you know, what's it called? Being transparent. You know, I worked with Neil for he worked a job. I worked with Neil for years. Like, that was my guy. Like, I love Neil. So when I heard these, I mean, and I'm not saying, you know, I wasn't there, but I was really disturbed. I mean, you never know anybody, but I was just like, Neil? Like, I just never saw that energy from him. But yeah, I'm not saying I was just fucked up by that. Like, not Neil. Like, Neil Portnow? Like, oh, man. So, you know, we'll see what happens with this case. Again, I don't want to say anybody's, you know, not telling their truth. I don't know. Just Neil, I never got the energy. I really like Neil a lot, man. He's a good dude, man. To me, he was a good guy.
No, I get it. And I was surprised to hear. Well, apparently, so for those who don't know what we're talking about, Deborah Dugan claims that she was ousted in retaliation for an email she sent to the Grammy board in December, citing a few issues within the organization, one of which was that there were rape allegations against Neil Portnoy that she wasn't made aware of until she accepted the role to replace him, that I think had maybe been settled out of court or something, but that were years old, but that were from an international singer, not somebody from
the an international artist. Yeah.
So definitely, like, the fact that the allegations are from somebody international, like, maybe they don't have the voice, maybe they don't have the whatever. So again, I had never heard anything like that. I'd never heard anything untoward at all against Neil Portnoy because his profile was so high. Obviously, you have to comport yourself a certain way. But that's just one of the things. The other thing she alleged was that, which we all know, we've talked on here before about how the Grammy process goes, and much like with the Academy, for the Oscars, you know, the people who are nominated are very largely dependent on the people who are voting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the people who make up the membership, which is why one of the initiatives Narrett has been taking for the past few years is trying to make it easier for younger eligible people to become members so that there's a better representation. But then there's the first round of votes. There's two round of Grammy votes, right?
I think so, yeah.
So there's the first round to kind of narrow down the field because, you know, labels literally submit any and everything they can submit.
Yes, yes.
They basically are going to submit anything that came out during the eligible time period, frankly. Mm-hmm. So there's the first round, which is to narrow it down to kind of the quote-unquote serious contenders. Once you get to the second round, you're in, there's like these conferences.
Yeah, he's on the low key. They do these meetings like at a hotel, like at Palm Springs or somewhere, like,
right.
And it'll be like like 2-3 days where they just sit in the room
and argue
about every category, like it goes back and forth and back and forth. And,
you know. If you're eligible, so if you have to, because everybody isn't eligible to vote in every category. It depends on your background. Mm-hmm. So you sit in these conferences that you're eligible to vote in, and so basically, if you don't have representation in that room, if somebody doesn't know your work in that room, the chances of you getting nominated or winning are very slim. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that she was saying, was that there are plenty of years that, including like when, you know, white artists have won, like, you know, when white rappers have won album of the year or have mm-hmm. won rap album of the year. Mm-hmm.
Like Macklemore and that type of shit.
Yeah, like when Macklemore won over Kendrick, that she was saying is directly because, you know, the old white men who are sitting on the inside are unduly influencing those votes. So, yes. You know, that makes people say, oh, the system's rigged. We knew it. Of course we knew the system is rigged. Because, of course, it's based on the members who mm-hmm. represent, you know, the voting.
Let's just say a lot of these members, a huge chunk of these members, are people that have been voting since, like, the 70s. Like, these guys has, like, been NARIS board members for, like, 35 years and stuff. And once you get on it, you can't really get off. It's like you're on it, you know?
And it's hard to change. Like, they've been trying to institute change because I also see people like, oh, well, maybe now things will change. It's like turning a ship. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it really can't happen quickly. It's a very large organization. It's a very storied organization. It's a very traditional organization, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And I think they see the need for adjustments and change, but it's just going to take a minute. But that said, every year it comes up again. And who needs the Grammys? There's always going to be an Oscar and a Grammys, y'all. It's always going to be. Whether we like it or not, whether we like what it represents or not, they're the two pinnacles of these various forms of entertainment. And I don't see a time in the near future where they go away.
Yeah. I did appreciate Tyler, the Creator, who won Best Rap. I was wrong about Nipsey, actually. Khaled won that award, but Nipsey actually is on that record.
Best Rap
album was Igor by Tyler, the Creator. And in his press conference in the back, he mentioned how whenever black artists do, especially nowadays, black artists kind of do like a genre-bending type of record that's not rock and roll based, like a Gary Clark or something like that, then they automatically put it in like rap category, urban and rap category.
Because Igor was not a rap album.
At all. It's an R&B album.
Yeah.
It's kind of like his version of both Pharrell's album when he had Happy on it.
I don't remember the name of
that. But that it's kind of his, it's very influenced by that. So yes, he does rap a little bit on the album, but it's not a rap album by any stretch. It's, you know, mad instrumentation and very musical. And so he was kind of saying like he's happy he won the award, but he didn't make a rap album, and he feels like, you know, it was easy for them to just stick his shit in the rap category because he's known as a rapper, and so it's instead of putting him somewhere else, like he felt like he should have been like in a pop category because that's kind of what his album was. And I appreciated him saying that because it's true, you know, like he shouldn't have taken that award away from, you know, Lil Baby and Gunna, or whoever was the rap
whoever
person.
Was nominated.
Yeah, Meek Mill's or whatever, like, because those are rap records. And so I appreciated Tyler kind of taking that stance.
And the white folks probably wanted to vote for Tyler because it was quote-unquote different.
Exactly.
You
and
know,
he's hip, and he's like, he's a big, what's it called, festival artist, so like he's known in those circles a lot more than a Meek Mill. You know what I'm saying? But again, he rightly said, like, I didn't make a rap album. You know what I'm saying? Like, so... but yeah, that's kind of what I had to say about the Grammys. Again, it wasn't like any groundbreaking moments this year. It was a good show. Like I said, the Kobe thing put a big cloud over it. But you know, the day went on, the show must go on. And on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Nah, wait, you're here next week, right? You don't go away next week.
Yeah, I'm here next week.
Okay, cool. Okay. The Oscars is not for a minute.
No, the Oscars is in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So we're going to wrap it up. We'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.